You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to Issues Etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love Issues Etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Scripture tells us, let us not grow weary in doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart.
I'm pro-life. The judges will be pro-life.
Do you support marriage equality?
It's irrelevant because it was already settled. It's law. It was settled in the Supreme Court. I mean, it's done.
We've been praying for President Obama ceaselessly in our church body, virtually every Sunday for his entire presidency, and we will continue to do that.
So God shepherds his people in two ways. He established both the temporal government, and he established the spiritual government, and he's at work in both of them, but they have different tasks.
Housewives, cleaning bathrooms, love issues, etc.
It is an explanation that's kind of been cooking for a while. We heard it early in the presidential campaign. I think it was actually floated by a former Secretary of State, not Hillary Clinton this time, but Madeleine Albright. And she talked about a vote for Hillary Clinton being a vote for women, and that if you didn't vote for Hillary Clinton, you were in effect voting against women. And that was before it was altogether clear who Hillary Clinton was going to be running against for president. And now that narrative has returned. The question is, was Hillary Clinton's candidacy a victim of sexism? Was she a victim of the fact that, well, what they'll tell you, angry white men refused to vote for a woman, not just Hillary Clinton, but any woman for President of the United States? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Live this Wednesday afternoon, November the 16th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard joins us to answer that question. We're going to talk about some other matters surrounding the presidential election. President-elect Donald Trump's Secretary of State, SNL's reaction, that is Saturday Night Live's reaction to the election, and late night comedy and the role that it played in Trump's election. Molly Ziegler Hemingway of The Federalist will be with us a little bit later. We'll be talking with Deaconess Heidi Gaiman about a recent set of statements made by two popular Christian authors, Jen Hatmaker and Glennon Doyle Melton. And then, living with toddlers, it is an experience. It is exhausting. We tend to think of them as little monsters, but that is probably not a good way of thinking about it. We're going to talk about living with toddlers. Anna Mussman will join us, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Seven Proven Ways to Stop Complaining and Enjoy Your Toddlers. Now, you can join us with questions or comments over the next 2 hours. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-MY-IE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet, @issuesetc. Or use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to answer the question, was Hillary Clinton's candidacy a victim of sexism? Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Was the election of Donald Trump in any way, or in some way, a referendum on the current state of feminism in America?
Well, I certainly don't think it was a referendum on the idea that women deserve to be respected and, frankly, deserve equality of opportunity in nearly all, you know, vocational respects in public life. However, there's a big difference between the way I define it there and the way a lot of people might think of feminism broadly and capital F feminism, which has become kind of a political program. And I don't think that these particularly aggressive political feminists quite realize that their particular political agenda diverges with that of women broadly. Women, you know, are split like the general public on abortion and other issues that they say are key to this new quote-unquote feminism. So they can't claim really to speak for all women in all respects, but that's what they want you to do when you go to the ballot box. And sure enough, we saw, for instance, that white women voted, a majority of white women voted for Donald Trump and instead of Hillary Clinton. And a lot of progressive commentators are in despair over this. You know, it's a trend that frankly makes perfect sense if you look at voting trends throughout history. So they shouldn't really be terribly surprised that sex isn't quite the binder the way that racial identity is when it comes to going to the ballot box.
So it is certainly a part of, we have to be able to recognize what they call identity politics mm-hmm. at work in this election. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very strange. I mean, you know, on one hand, they push racial identification as a way to vote. And then they are, and now progressives are grappling with the fact that this racialization spilled over into white people this election, and they don't understand how I think that is an unintended backlash to identity politics, which is to say that only certain people are supposed to view themselves racially when they go to the ballot box, and white people aren't. And I just think that once you push that mixed message long enough, you're going to get a backlash. And I think looking, you know, delving into the numbers of in the demographics of the vote, we kind of saw a little bit of that racial backlash among white people.
Now, you write recently about an aha moment that you experienced while in the context of the election results, watching Saturday Night Live's cold open, Kate mm-hmm. McKinnon imitating Hillary Clinton, singing oddly a Leonard Cohen song after his recent death. What was your aha moment?
Well, I realized that the last time I had seen Kate McKinnon on television was in the trailers for the movie Ghostbusters. The remake of the beloved original that was all female. And I don't even recall, it was quite a big source of controversy over the summer because the trailer just kind of fell flat. It didn't look very funny. It became the most disliked movie trailer in YouTube history because of it. And I think it had as much to do with the fact that they were trotting on sort of a beloved classic, not so much that men were reacting necessarily to the idea that the cast had been, you know, replaced by women. But I just realized that the way that whole fight went down, where the immediate response was, well, we haven't made a very good movie, or maybe we should address viewers' concerns about the movie. It was, people don't like this movie because they're sexist, not because, you know, we can independently judge whether it's funny or not. And at one point, after the film came out, the movie's official Twitter account actually went so far as to tweet an endorsement of Hillary Clinton, which ended up being deleted because I'm sure, you know, Sony, the movie studio that put out the movie, was not too thrilled about the idea that they'd be signaling that they only wanted, you know, non-Republican to come see the movie. So this conflating of, you know, trying to stir up gender sympathies to get people to the box office wasn't a good tactic then, and I don't think I think it was a harbinger for why it was a bad tactic to get people to the ballot box as well.
Now, how does that connect to Hillary Clinton, where you say she's kind of the Ghostbusters, the Lady Ghostbusters of presidential candidates?
Right. Well, it's just simply that people were told that you have to like something because it was female, and if you didn't like it, you were sexist. When the reality is people had all kinds of independent reasons unrelated to the sex of the cast of Ghostbusters or Hillary Clinton's, you know, particular, you know, being the first woman president. So to tell people that they were incapable of thinking independently about whether or not to support, you know, either a movie or a presidential candidate really backfired in both cases and in ways that you can draw a lot of similar parallels to.
Was part of the problem here that the message wasn't consistent? Because the left, while supporting Hillary Clinton and really pushing the, you know, your bucket list vote, you get a chance to vote for the first female president, at the same time is on different fronts in the culture, pushing hard against the notion of binary gender, male and female. They're talking about a spectrum of genders. And to me, that seems completely inconsistent. If gender's just a between my ears, if it's just a social construct, voting for a female president isn't that big of a deal.
No, yeah, that's exactly right. In fact, there already have been open conflicts about this. Germaine Greer, famous feminist, but of the older feminist wave, was quoted, I think, in a British newspaper saying exactly that, that, you know, it was, you know, appropriation for men to decide they're women someday and claim that they know that the struggles that women go through because of their unique biology and place in the world. And similarly, you know, on the more practical, like, activist front, we've seen situations where what radical feminists or rad femmes for short, which is a sort of specific subset of feminism, have, you know, clashed directly with transgender activists in places like Portland, Oregon, and things like that. I believe there was an article in the New Yorker last year about that. So we're seeing this on multiple fronts where I think there's a lot of women that are waking up going, hey, wait a minute, you know, on one hand, if you're telling us that, you know, sex doesn't matter, and then this next minute you're telling me that's the most important thing in the world and it's got to dictate every decision I make in terms of, you know, what movie I see to what presidential candidate I vote for, you know, this is entirely inconsistent, and, you know, clearly this is just about, you know, consolidating power for somebody.
You say that candidate Clinton wore that feminist chip on her shoulder pretty much through the entire thing. In fact, in her previous presidential campaign, too, didn't she?
Absolutely. I mean, this was played up as a big subtext throughout 2008, that the reason why Obama was besting her was because voters were inherently more sexist. Now, that was a difficult argument to make because Obama was going to be the first black president. But believe me, they made it. Gloria Steinem specifically wrote an op-ed in the New York Times in January of 2008 when it looked like Clinton wasn't doing so well. She did go on that month to win the New Hampshire primary. But, you know, Gloria Steinem specifically made the argument that, you know, it was harder to be a woman than it was to be, you know, black in America, which is just, you know, incredible. I mean, would you rather be Barack Obama in pre-14th century America or Hillary Clinton in pre-19th century America? I don't think there's much of a choice, you know, in terms of, you know, who was treated worse. However, you know, again, even in this election, there was one of those leaked WikiLeaks emails. There was a New York Times reporter, Mark Leibovich, who emailed the campaign, you know, incredibly asking the campaign what quotes they didn't want him to use, and not the best journalistic practice there. And one of the quotes the campaign nixed was Hillary Clinton telling him that, you know, it was an interesting phenomenon and somebody needed to unpack it. Why is it that gay rights and civil rights had moved so much faster than women's rights, as if gay people and, you know, black people in America had been more fortunate than women, which is just kind of a mind-boggling thing to contemplate. It's not to say that women don't have unique struggles or have not experienced problems or discriminations or you know, sexual assault or any number of horrible things and injustices that need to be rectified. But, you know, to place it on the top of the hierarchy there shows a tremendous sort of disconnect, I think. And I think that disconnect really sort of resonated with the public and is a big reason why people were not inclined to vote for Hillary Clinton just because she was a woman.
So in other words, it's really difficult if you are, say, as you write, a female Hollywood type who is being cast for big summer blockbusters, or if you're Hillary Clinton running for president,
right?
It's not that credible to say I'm being held back because I'm a woman.
I mean, and the thing is, you know, we have not had a woman president yet. I think one day we'll have one, and may the best woman win. But I don't think we're at a stage in American life where people feel that there's, you know, barriers that are insurmountable to keep women from the office. The last three presidential administrations have had females as secretaries of state, including Hillary Clinton, which is, you know, about as close to an important post in the United States government, you know, as it gets without actually being president. In fact, might even be more important, you know, in terms of day-to-day functions than, say, the vice presidency. So I just don't think people are buying this, you know, we've got to, you know, evolve as a society to let this happen because we're already there. It just hasn't happened yet. And in order for that to happen, you have to have a better candidate than Hillary Clinton, and it would help if we didn't have a candidate that wasn't, you know, climbing the back of the political career of her more talented husband, you know, as opposed to being a woman who was, you know, her own woman who had her own career and wasn't, you know, so craven and ambitious the way that Hillary Clinton was.
So how does the narrative get tweaked here? Because the narrative was before, well, if she loses, it's going to be because of sexism. But of course, as we examine the exit polls and the data coming from the voters, it's pretty clear that she also lost a lot of women, too. How does the narrative now get tweaked to explain that?
That is a really good question. I mean, part of the thing here is we don't know what sort of narratives they're going to pump out yet. We're just kind of frankly in a hysterical phase. There has been a lot of hysteria about this. There was a piece in the New York Times by a writer, Lindy West, where she claimed that, you know, women had foregone their solidarity to their sex to embrace white supremacy, and you've heard some of that, you know, decrying for once that racial identity is more important. And I don't know if they're going to stick with that narrative, but that's one narrative they're going with. But I think the reality is that looking back at this victory, because it was so unprecedented and so stunning, that most people just sort of are quietly recognizing that Hillary Clinton was a terrible candidate whose message didn't resonate. They're being sort of polite about it. They don't quite want to lay the blame at Hillary Clinton's feet. And Hillary Clinton sure doesn't want to lay the blame at her own feet. I mean, she recently blamed FBI Director James Comey for her defeat. So I don't know what we're going to see, how this, you know, what emerges from this. But I think it will be very hard to say that sexism was the reason. And I'd be shocked if that was the narrative everyone coalesced around.
There was one bright moment we mentioned before, Kate McKinnon's cold open to Saturday Night Live. But there's a bright moment. The first sketch that they did was a bunch of New Yorkers sitting around watching election results, mm-hmm. and Dave Chappelle, and then later Chris Rock enters the room as kind of the only two black guys in the room.
Yeah.
And after the results are kind of apparent, it's the midnight scenario. One of the women in the cast says, "You just don't know how hard it is to be a woman in America today," which got guffaws in the script from Dave Chappelle and Chris Rock. Has that card been played just one too many times, even if it's getting spoofed on SNL?
Well, I don't know if it's been played certainly a lot of times in the wrong sort of circumstances. And again, you know, you have to measure the relative level of injustice. There was another great line in that same sketch where this person looks at the television after the results comes in and says, "This is the most shameful thing that America's ever done." And Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle don't even say anything. They just look at each other. And it's so obvious what the joke is. Do we really think that, you know, being... living in an era where women can be Secretary of State in every presidential administration, you know, is comparable to, you know, 50 years ago when, you know, Jim Crow laws were in full effect in places. I just don't think that we can, have this hierarchy where feminist concerns are at the top of the list, and in terms of social justice, and have people buy into it.
One last question for you, Mark, and that has to do with the presidency being referred to repeatedly over the last 2 years of presidential campaigning. It was apparent from the beginning that Hillary Clinton was going to be running relatively unopposed. There was a minor skirmish with Bernie Sanders. But the White House was referred to as the ultimate glass ceiling. I think there will be a female president someday soon. Once that ceiling's broken, in particular if it's broken by a conservative woman, mm-hmm. Will feminists accept that as a final breaking of the ultimate glass ceiling?
Well, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. Feminism is a political program. It is not actually about advancing the rights of women often in a way that is sort of objective and even-handed. So it doesn't matter if you are black or female or Hispanic or whatever identity politics box you want to check off. What matters is that person also represents a specific political program. We've seen this again and again. Clarence Thomas is an incredibly respected and capable Supreme Court justice, and liberal commentators frequently refer to him as an Uncle Tom and say all kinds of nasty things about him because he's somehow not authentically black. By the same token, I mean, even though Sarah Palin was, you know, groundbreaking in terms of her being nominated on a Republican ticket, and she was the governor of Alaska and any number of things that suggested she was perfectly qualified to be president of the United States, people lost their minds because she was not the right kind of woman. You know, she was a mother. She had chosen not to abort a child with Down syndrome. I mean, she'd done all these things that good feminist women were not supposed to do, and that drove them nuts. I we'll see whether or not the left has learned from this election that the way they've aggressively pursued political correctness and identity politics actually hamstrung them in the election. But for right now, I don't see any clear indication they've learned that lesson. But it should be obvious now that the Democratic Party has been, you know, completely destroyed at the state, local, and federal level.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled "Hillary Clinton Was the Lady Ghostbusters of Presidential Candidates." You can read it at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mark, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
On the other side of the break, we are joined by Mark's better half, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, senior editor of The Federalist. We're going to be talking about President-elect Donald Trump's Secretary of State, Saturday Night Live's reaction to the election, and late-night comedy and Trump's election. Stay tuned.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office. 314-416-8117.
Christians, young and old, are increasingly pressured to change their beliefs. That's why St. Jude said we need to contend for the faith once for all delivered to the saints. At the San Antonio Worldview Conference, Confessional Lutherans Jonathan Fisk, Jay Weber, Ryan McPherson, and Craig Parton will unmask the false, direct us to Christ and His Word, and defend the faith. The San Antonio Worldview Conference, Saturday, February the 11th, San Antonio, Texas. Visit worldviewsa.org. worldusa.org.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
Issues Etc. offered post-election analysis from a variety of perspectives. Former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese.
By giving a list of the type of people that he would appoint as judges, it gave a number of people confidence that a President Trump would be very cognizant of the importance of constitutional appointments to the court.
Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
I am hopeful, though, that his appointees and also the Republican Congress will push for and enact protections for people who happen to have religious convictions on these matters so that they won't be simply driven out of society.
Journalist Molly Hemingway.
The media are so far removed from actual people who don't live in Washington or New York that they were unable to see what was going on, even though people were trying pretty hard to convey their feelings here.
Social critic Aaron Wolf.
If they're serious about curbing abortion, we need to hold their feet to the fire on this because they now have a signature from the president that they should be able to get. And therefore, they are without excuse when it comes to these things.
And never Trumper, Dr. Frank Beckwith.
The accusation of racism, I think, is just a cheap slur. And of course, these people can't defend themselves. And here comes Donald Trump, and he says, I'll stand by you. I will be your advocate. And it explained to me why people gravitated to this man. And it's somebody who I did not support myself, but I think I understand much better now.
Your comprehensive source for news, information, and truth. Issues, etc.